Please note that this week's newscast runs 34 minutes, 58 seconds, and contains three breaks, starting at the tone. Mark.
The following is a closed circuit and not necessarily for air. With a report on the current state of Amateur Radio Newsline's financial picture, here's our producer, Bill Pasternak, WA6 ITF.
Thanks to a number of you who provide month-to-month contributions, it's been quite a long time since I've been here to ask for widespread support for Amish Radio Newsline's operations. And while we deeply appreciate our ongoing contributors, the fact is that the income we derive from their generosity is simply not enough to see us through the long term. And that long term, if you will, is very quickly sneaking up on us. Simply said, Amish Radio Newsline needs widespread support right now if we are to continue to stay in operation to bring you these weekly newscasts, and only you, our friends and our listeners, can provide it. To that end, we try to make it as simple as possible to make your tax-deductible donation to us. Simply go to our website at arnewsline.org and click on the PayPal button to make a donation electronically, or if you'd rather, you can send us a check at the address you'll hear at the end of this week's newscast. Either way, the all-volunteer Amateur Radio Newsline team once again says thank you. Thank you to all of you in advance for your ongoing generosity and for your support. I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. Now here's Jim Dameron, NATMW, with this week's newscast. Jim?
Now, Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1857, with a release date of March 8, 2013, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. 2013 will see two global simulated tests in April. France approves digital voice for its ham radio community. A review of Canada's ham radio examination questions is underway. Comments on WRC 2015 close on March 22nd. And the legendary CBS World News Roundup turns 75. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1857, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
There will be two global simulated emergency tests taking place on the Saturdays either side of World Amateur Radio Day, which is slated for Thursday, April the 18th. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, has more.
Greg Mossop, G0DUB, is the International Amateur Radio Union Region 1 Emergency Coordinator. He says the first global simulated emergency test will happen on Saturday, April 13th, and will repeat the format of 2011, using local time for each station. This will give a good chance of messages moving towards the regional headquarters stations to be delivered. The second Saturday, April the 20th, will see answers to those messages starting from the headquarters stations and being sent back to the countries that originated them. According to Jim Linton, VK3PC, the Global Simulated Emergency Test, also known as Global Set, is an opportunity to increase the common interest in emergency communications, to create practices for international emergency communications and the relaying of messages. Linton, who is the chairman of the IARU Region 3 Disaster Communications Committee, says that Global Set is open to all three IARU regions and will be held on or near the Emergency Center of Activity frequencies on the 80, 40, 20, 17 and 15 meter bands. VK3PC adds that the full rules concerning this emergency training operating event are available to those who register through their IARU regional coordinator. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, down under in Nelson, New Zealand.
Again, those dates are April 13th and the 20th for the twin edition of the 2013 Global Simulated Emergency Test. It will be followed June 25th through the 28th by the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference, or GARIC 2013, in Zurich, Switzerland. France has finally approved the use of digital modes by its ham radio community. According to word from Digital Radio Amateurs of France President F1SHS, the new draft regulation was signed by the minister on Wednesday, March the 6th. Until now, French radio amateurs had been banned from using digital modes, including D-Star and the like. F1SHS calls this great news for the French amateur radio community, following a lot of work on the part of the organization. As a result of its response to a request for proposals from telecommunications regulator Industry Canada, Radio Amateurs of Canada has been awarded a $20,000 contract. This to review the questions used for examinations to qualify radio amateurs in that nation. The actual work began on January 28th with the final product to be delivered to Industry Canada April 17th. More than 3,000 questions are being reviewed. Of these, 965 are in English and in French for the basic qualification. Another 545 in English and in French for the advanced qualification. The objective of the review is to identify questions and answers no longer relevant, as well as those requiring modifications to correct grammatical errors or improve clarity. The review should also lead to new questions on aspects of amateur radio that have changed in recent years. The present work is the first comprehensive review of the Canadian question pool in more than a decade. While some current questions were revised in 2007, many questions date from much earlier. Radio Amateurs of Quebec Incorporated is working with Radio Amateurs of Canada on the French language component of this question pool revision and overhaul. Comments are due March 22nd on FCC draft recommendations regarding issues to be considered at the 2015 World Radio Communication Conference, or WRC. These discussions generally involve international spectrum-related agreements. You can read the current recommendations at tinyurl.com/FCC-WRC-15. The Commission is also seeking comment on National Telecommunications and Information Agency's draft proposals to WRC 15. The NTIA is the executive branch agency that is principally responsible for advising the President on telecommunications and information policy issues. You can read its proposals at tinyurl.com/NTIA-WRC-15. The FCC says that public input will help the Commission in its upcoming talks with the Department of State and the NTIA in developing United States positions for WRC 15. It should be noted that the FCC's International Bureau is inclined to support most of the suggestions provided by the WRC 15 Advisory Committee. Filed comments should reference IB docket number 04-286. Hams in Montana now have both antenna height limit and protection from distracted driving laws. The ARRL reports that on February 28th, Governor Steve Bullock signed House Bill 148 into law to provide protections to the state's ham radio community. Montana State Representative Pat Connell, WA7PDC, had submitted the bill titled Clarifying Local Government Authority to Regulate Amateur Radio Operations to the 2013 Montana Legislative Docket. The new law prohibits local governments from regulating licensed amateur radio operations from a motor vehicle. It also establishes a 100-foot height limit below which local jurisdictions may not regulate ham radio towers and antennas. Read more details on this good news for Montana hams online at the ARRL website using the shortcut tinyurl.com/Montana-antenna-win. And oh yes, were you aware that the Montana state fossil is Mayasaur, also known as the duck-billed dinosaur? According to Wikipedia, it is, and we thought you might like to know. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KD8LWR repeater serving Dexter, Michigan.
I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, with word that the Dayton Hamvention has announced this year's winners of its famed awards. The news was made public on the March 13th edition of Ham Nation by past Hamvention General Chairman Michael Kalter, WHCI, with a well-known ham from Germany gathering the top spot.
Our amateur of the year this year is Mustafa Landolzi, a Delta Lima 1 Bravo Delta Foxtrot. He was actually born in Tunisia and has set up six radio stations in Tunisia in amateur radio. He's brought them into the IARU. He's worked tirelessly to help Middle Eastern countries, African countries in amateur radio. He also set up and organized a delivery of emergency medical equipment, emergency medicine in Africa and other third world countries. And he is so well known throughout the world, and his work actually embodies what amateur radio is about. He tries to bring people together from different countries, and just his heart is 100% in amateur radio.
Recognized as this year's recipient of the Special Achievement Award is George Thomas, W5JDX of Ridgeland, Mississippi. For those of you who are not aware, George is the producer of the internet TV show known as AmateurLogic.tv. He also co-hosts Ham Nation with Bob Heil, K9EID, and Gordon West, WB6NOA, on Twit TV. And he took the opportunity to thank those who've been working with him over the past few years.
You know, I couldn't do this without my partners in there, Tommy and Jimmy and Peter, and of course, Bob and Gordo.
Sharing the 2013 Technical Achievement Award are Dave Witten, KD0EAG, and David Rowe, VK5DGR. They are being honored for their combined work in developing a free digital voice program that can encode high-quality digital voice into a 1.25 kHz bandwidth for use on the high-frequency bands. Rounding out this year's winners is the West Palm Beach Amateur Radio Club in Florida. It was chosen for its ongoing outreach program to the local community that includes 7-day-a-week manning of a ham radio station at the South Florida Museum. Also noted was the club's sponsorship of an ARIS contact that was made available live and in real time to a record number of 250,000 students across the state. This year's winners will receive their awards at Hamvention 2013 that runs from May 17th to the 19th at the Harrah Arena in the World Capital of Amateur Radio of Dayton, Ohio. Its plan is to say they hope to see you there. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles. Jim?
A Cocoa, Florida ham has been hit with a $25,000 notice of apparent liability for allegedly causing interference to the Brevard County Sheriff's Department. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details.
According to the March 1st notice of apparent liability issued to Terry L. von Volkenberg, the FCC says that it used radio direction finding to locate a signal interfering with communications at the Brevard County Sheriff's Department jail in Sharpies, Florida. The FCC says that von Volkenberg, whom the agency notes holds an amateur service license and the call sign KC5RF, was the source of the interference to the prison complex, which is licensed to use 465-300 megahertz for its communications. By the way of background, in September 2012, the Enforcement Bureau's Tampa office received a complaint of radio interference from the Sheriff's Department. According to the complaint, on at least 14 days during the months of September and October of 2012, that law enforcement agency experienced intermittent interference to the communications at the jail on 465-300 megahertz. Audio recordings taken by the Sheriff's Department suggest that a male individual interfering with the prison communications by transmitting vulgar language, sound effects, previously recorded prison communications, and threats to prison officials over the prison's radio communication system. In response, on October 28, 2012, agents from the Tampa office, using direction finding, and traced the source of interference to a residence in Cocoa, Florida. The agents also recognized von Volkenberg's voice as the one interfering with the prison's communication system. Approximately 2 hours after locating the source of the transmission, the agents inspected the radio stations in von Volkenberg's residence. The FCC says that von Volkenberg initially showed the agents an amateur radio station that was incapable of transmitting on 465 300 megahertz. However, when pressed by the agents, he eventually produced an Elanco DJ-C5 portable radio that could operate on 465 300 megahertz. Initially, von Volkenberg did not specifically admit that he had interfered with the prison's communication system. But when asked about the transmissions on 465 300 megahertz and the interference to the prison, he stated that he chose 465 300 megahertz because the prison's transmission on that frequency were strong. Also, that he was only using 300 milliwatts and did not think that he could talk over anyone and therefore wasn't interfering with anyone. At that point, von Volkenberg is also reported to have declared that the interference would not happen again. But in issuing the proposed fine, the FCC is essentially saying that it does not buy von Volkenberg's defense. It states that while von Volkenberg holds an amateur license and the call sign of KC5RF, that this license does not authorize him to operate on public safety frequencies. The FCC says the bottom line is that the evidence in this case is sufficient to establish that von Volkenberg violated the FCC rules on 14 different days during September and October 2012. As such, he's eligible for the proposed $25,000 fine. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Von Volkenberg was given the usual 30 days to pay the proposed fine or to file an appeal. The FCC says that California resident Kevin Bondi will have to pay a $24,000 fine. Back in 2011, the commission issued a forfeiture order against Bondi for operating in the general mobile radio service and unlawfully causing interference to licensed radio operations. He was also charged with refusing to allow the FCC to inspect his radio gear. The commission said Bondi's radio equipment interfered with the two-way radios used by the Oaks Shopping Center in Thousand Oaks, California. During its investigation, FCC agents also found an unlicensed and unauthorized repeater transmitter in a secured radio communications facility on Oat Mountain in the Santa Susana Mountains. The transmissions effectively jammed Oaks' operation on two of its frequencies. Now, in its memorandum opinion and order, the FCC states that Bondi was supposed to file his appeal by July 6, 2011. While he did email a copy to the local enforcement bureau before that date, the agency said there's no evidence Bondi sent a copy to the commission secretary as required by law. As far as the FCC is concerned, this means that the appeal was not properly filed, and the agency considers it as being procedurally defective. In its release dismissing the appeal, the FCC notes that Bondi raised no new arguments in the version that it did receive. Based on all the evidence before it, the agency said it decided to reaffirm and gave Bondi the customary 30 days from the February 15th release date to pay the amount in full. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio News Line, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Federal officials say a small aircraft that reportedly looked like a drone and violated the airspace at John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York on March 4th was probably a radio-controlled model aircraft sent aloft from Long Island that lost its way. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has more.
Whatever the object was, the FBI and the Federal Aviation Administration issued an alert on Tuesday, March 5th. one seeking the public's assistance in identifying the operator in the aircraft, which a nearby pilot described as black in color, about 3 feet wide, and with four propellers. The unidentified aircraft was spotted about 1:15 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday, March 4th, by the pilot of an Alitalia airliner as it approached runway 31 right at JFK International. Because no flight plan was filed with the FAA for the mystery aircraft, authorities believe it probably was a radio remote-controlled model sent aloft by a hobbyist. Officials speculate that the craft likely took off from somewhere along the south shore of Long Island and had drifted off course when the operator lost radio contact with it. It then flew in the direction of JFK International on its own. In his report to the control tower, the Alitalia pilot said that he had seen what appeared to be a drone aircraft. At the time of the sighting, he said the aircraft had an altitude of about 1,500 feet and was about 3 miles from his plane. That would put it well above the 400-foot height restriction for radio-controlled model aircraft and well within restricted airport airspace. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB, a few hundred miles west of JFK International in Wadsworth, Ohio.
Les Dorr is a spokesman for the Federal Aviation Administration. He says that regardless of whether someone is operating as a public agency or a person flying a model for recreational purposes, they always have to give way to any aircraft in the vicinity. In other words, you are not supposed to be flying anywhere near or over a major airport. Modern Amateur Radio is the title of a new bilingual video produced in Canada by Donald Boucher, VE2XT. Boucher put the show together in full widescreen high def, and it includes some truly breathtaking aerial footage of the Canadian countryside. VE2XT tells Newsline he owns a video production company in Montreal and that he shot the video last year in his spare time. Posting of the video to YouTube was done by CQ propagation editor Thomas Hood, NW7US. What makes Modern Amateur Radio unique is its international flavor. While the narration is in English, most of the natural sound background conversations are in French. But you don't have to understand the French language to truly enjoy this Canadian look at our great hobby. See it for yourself at tinyurl.com/modern-amateur-radio. The organizers of 2012L, the amateur radio special event station celebrating the London Olympic and Paralympic Games in the summer of 2012, have now released a 45-minute DVD of the event. Produced by Fred Curtis, G3SVK, the DVD goes behind the scenes at the event, telling the story of how those 69,664 QSOs were made possible. Details can be found at www.2012L.com under the news link. CQ Magazine has announced the launch of the online CQ Photo Gallery to supplement photos published in the magazine. According to editor Rich Moseson, W2VU, the magazine shoots photos at many events. It also receives many photos from readers that it doesn't have the space to put in the magazine. But CQ still wants to share these with its readers, and the new CQ Photo Gallery will allow it to do just that. Moseson says that the new photo gallery is on the Flickr.com website and is organized into albums called sets. Initial sets include CQ cover images, the CQ garage featuring ham radio license plates, news photos from the FCC's field hearing on communications lessons learned from Superstorm Sandy, and reader-submitted photos. New pictures will be added regularly. The CQ photo gallery may be accessed at www.flickr.com/photos/CQ Photo Gallery/sets, but you can also reach it by using the shortcut tinyurl.com/CQ-photos-online. Some names in the news. First up is Rob Chipperfield, M0VFC, who has been selected as the first recipient of the CAS Award. This in recognition of his DX operation from the remote South Atlantic island of Tristan da Cunha as ZD9UQ in October of 2012. During his short 4-day operation, Chipperfield worked 3,362 unique stations and thereby demonstrated an outstanding effort to log as many individuals as possible. The Cass Award was created and named in memory of the late DXing legend Hugh Cassidy, WA6AUD. It is meant to encourage DX expeditions to maximize the number of unique contacts made and comes with a $1,000 prize for the single operator DX expedition that works the most unique call signs within a 4-week period. More information about the award program is available at www.cassaward.com. The Radio Club of America has appointed Patricia Cosiol as its executive secretary effective February 25th. RCA President Bruce R. McIntyre also announced the assignment of Ms. Cosiol's firm, Peak Management Solutions for Associations, to manage the administrative and programmatic activities of the association. Patricia Cosiol currently manages 7 other trade associations and 2 national and regional trade events. The legendary CBS Radio World News Roundup has turned 75. The first broadcast took place on the evening of March 13, 1938. That's when legendary CBS radio newsman Robert Trout reported from New York that the Nazis were driving with all their might to bring Austria under complete Nazi domination. Then, in what has become an historic moment in broadcast history, Trout stopped talking so listeners could hear live reports from correspondents throughout Europe. One of these was Edward R. Murrow in Vienna, who went on to become another CBS broadcast legend. Over the years, the CBS Radio World News Roundup has been there night after night, bringing all of us the news live and direct from the scene. And even in the age of instant reporting over the internet and bloggers proliferating while spewing opinions as news, the CBS World News Roundup stands apart as one of the most accurate, concise, and listened to news sources in the world. It also is a credit to those at CBS who created it 7.5 decades ago. Ironically, you can read the full story about this iconic radio news service online at tinyurl.com/CBS-news-at-75. And if we may be permitted to add our own tiny voice, we say happy 75th to this ongoing radio legend. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio News Line, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org, and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Yet another expansion of RF Finder and the Worldwide Repeater Directory. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, reports.
RF Finder has added the Japanese language to its operational ability. In their ongoing effort to make localized versions of RF Finder available, the creators have announced the Android version of RF Finder, version 3, and have also loaded the canonical list of analog and D-Star repeaters across Japan Nation into the system's Worldwide Repeater Directory. To use it, just download RFinder from Google Play. If your device is using Japanese as its language, RFinder will automatically load in Japanese. RFinder is already available in English, Spanish, and French. Italian, German, and Portuguese are in development and are said to be next. The Worldwide Repeater Directory database is the first repeater directory covering the world of amateur radio on Android, iPhone, and RT system software. It also works with Chirp, the World Wide Web, and can be loaded into points of interest on most GPSs. This makes it of special interest, especially to the globe-trotting ham. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, in Zion, Illinois.
So far, 178 countries are included in the Worldwide Repeater Directory. More information about RF Finder and the database system is on the web at www.rffinder.net-blog. The caps will keep on coming. So says AMSAT North America after a deal was reached between the Amateur Radio Space Agency and the Air Force Space Command that will permit AMSAT to continue to redistribute Keplerian elements from the latter's spacetrack service. Keplerian elements, sometimes called by the acronym KEPS, are the basis for all satellite tracking. According to AMSAT's Orbital Data Manager, Ray Hode, WA5QGD, the redistribution agreement was approved on March 7th for the period April 1, 2013 to April 1, 2014. From the radio sports file, remember to mark down March 23rd as the date of the 2013 Alaska CUSO Party. The event runs from 1800 UTC and continues to 2359 UTC on the 24th. This is an HF-only contest on 160, 80, 40, 20, and 10 meters using CW, SSB, PSK-31, and RITI. A similar event for the VHF bands will be held July 15th through the 16th with the same hours. More information on both CUSO parties online at kl7yk.us/akqso.htm. On the air, 8N1MOMO is a special call sign celebrating both the 37th Momo Peach Blossom Festival and the 20th Fire Balloon Contest in the Ibaraki Prefecture on Honshu Island. Honshu is Japan's largest island, and the station will be operational until April 5th. QSL only via the JA Bureau. And the group of hams who are working to restore Gray Point Fort will be operating a special event station from 1700 UTC May 31st to 1700 UTC June 2nd. Gray Point Fort is a World War I coastal defense fort located in Helens Bay, Northern Ireland. The special event operation will be using three yet-to-be-announced special event call signs. More information posted online at tinyurl.com/graypoint-2013 or by email to graypointfort@hotmail.co.uk. In DX, word that JQ2WTT and JE1XUZ, who are KH0XH and KH0XW, respectively, will be active from Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands through April 1st. Both are university undergraduates. QSL via each operator's home call sign, either direct or via the JA Bureau. An international team of seven operators are currently on the air from the Solomon Islands, signing H44G. Several stations will be operating simultaneously on various bands between 160 through 6 meters using CW and SSB, RITI, PSK-31, and SSTV. It all comes to an end March 25th. QSLs go via DL7DF. GM3WOJ and GM4YXI will be active from Cocos Keeling Island from March 30th through April 13th using the new call sign of VK9CZ. They plan to be on SSB and CW with some RITI, hope to have a real-time logging system and daily logbook of the world updates. More updates on this operation found online at www.vk9cz.com. Lastly, a group of Italian operators are planning a de-expedition to Djerba Island using the call TS8TI between April 29 and May 6th. Operation will be on all HF bands plus 6 meters using CW, SSB, RITI, and several digital modes. More information on this operation online at www.qrz.com/db/TS8TI. And finally this week, a follow-up to our story of a few weeks ago concerning a privately funded United States mission to the planet Mars. Now it's been revealed that it won't be to Mars, but rather a sightseeing round trip around the red planet. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, has the details.
According to news sources, a team led by millionaire and former space tourist Dennis Tito plans to send what it calls a tested couple to Mars and back in a privately funded mission. The Inspiration Mars Foundation plans to start its one-and-a-half-year mission in January 2018, providing that it can raise funding for the mission. The foundation has carried out a study which it says shows that it is feasible to achieve such a mission using existing technology. Among those involved in the project is Jane Poynter, who spent 2 years locked away in a sealed ecosystem with seven other people in 1991. Mission planners wanted the crew to consist of an older couple whose relationship would be able to withstand the stress of living in a confined environment for 2 years. I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
More on this story online at tinyurl.com/mars-round-trip. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights reserved.